through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, we got a fun show planned for you guys on a Tuesday. And I am going to be that annoying person that tells you something we're going to be talking about in like an hour and a half. But I'm telling you, it is worth the wait. Curtis and I were in tears today, laughing so hard. No offense, Jake. Look, I know we weren't being supportive friends in the moment, but I want you to know if you were not you, it would have been funny. Mm-hmm. If you weren't experiencing the pain of that, which you were, it would have been hilarious. So
yeah, it came directly at Jake's expense this morning.
Oh, yes. And it was so funny.
Well, really, it was last night. I've been dealing with this since last night, but hey, whatever.
Oh, we'll, my God. I'm
we'll
not
tease
over it.
This,
I'm
and
still
everybody
not over
can
it.
Find out about the ridiculousness that I've been through over the past like 12 hours. But, you know, all is right in the world again.
I learned that we are, all of us, Kyle Brown, Curtis, me, Mike Lefko, awful friends when it comes to support, but amazing, like quick timing kind of puns at your expense. Like I was really proud of the four of us, the jokes we were able to come up with. So we'll get to that in the timeline at 12:30. Also, I cannot stop talking about Shrimp Man. I'll spend 2 minutes on it, but you guys, I have to tell you about this. That's coming up in the timeline at 12:30 and in a little bit during three questions. We've also got Mike Salk joining us, just like he does every weekday at 11:30. And NBC Sports Northwest Joe Fan going to join us at noon to recap everything that happened in the first week of free agency for the Seahawks and take a look ahead to what Seattle still needs. Speaking of taking a look ahead, one of the things that we've been noticing with some of Seattle's moves so far in free agency is that there are really only two notable new additions. Well, I guess two outside additions. You've got tight end Gerald Everett, okay? And they traded to acquire guard Gabe Jackson from the Raiders. Other than that, most of the band has been brought back together. You missed out on Carlos Hyde. He signed elsewhere. Shaquille Griffin obviously signed elsewhere. Philip Dorsett, though he wasn't really a notable part of your offense.
He
I'm just throwing names in there because all three signed with Jacksonville. You had David Moore move on. He goes to Carolina. You're waiting to see where a few pending Seahawks free agent lands. Carlos Dunlap has not signed anywhere yet. KJ Wright has not signed anywhere yet. And I'll add on Benson Mayoa as your other defender who has not signed anywhere yet. Which kind of caused us to question, Jake, are the Seahawks a Super Bowl contender if they mostly just bring the band back together? We're not talking the New England Patriots going out there and signing a ton of big name free agents, spending a ton of money in free agency, which is weird for them, but they're going to look like a very new team. In addition to the guys they have coming back, they've also got guys who had to sit out last year that are now returning for them. So they're going to look very different. The Seahawks could look very similar, right? You're going to have a couple guys that are gone. Your wide receiver three is gone. You got to find someone else there. Your backup running back's gone. For the most part, though, the band's back together. How are we feeling about that?
So if they're able to bring back Carlos Dunlap, Benson Mayoa, and KJ Wright for the sake of conversation, what you have been able to do is you have upgraded at that left guard position, as you'd mentioned, Gabe Jackson over Mike Iupati and Jordan Simmons, I believe, is a very big upgrade, and I think it's a good one. The other one is Gerald Everett over Greg Olsen. You know, Curtis, I know that you're still upset about Greg Olsen moving on and doing his broadcast
career.
Not
even a little bit.
Oh, come on. Not even a little bit?
Not even the slightest.
Okay. Well,
shout out to Gerald Everett.
Okay. Gerald Everett is replacing Greg Olsen. So in Curtis's mind and in my mind as well, you are upgrading at that position.
Sure.
You have a true chess piece
that at
tight end. So you have some hole. You have a hole at receiver three. What is that going to look like? Shaquille Griffin's gone, right? Do you have enough? And I think that the answers to the remaining questions to fill out their roster obviously is going to play a factor in this, but I do think that they have enough. I mean, you talk about them being 12-4 last year, and at the beginning of the year, you had to have the offense play at an unbelievable level just to get them to squeak by in games because their defense was so bad, right? Mm-hmm. Their defense was on track to break records in how bad they were. And now you get Carlos Dunlap to start the season. You get your defense to start the season. You get everybody relatively healthy moving forward. I believe that makes your team better from start to finish. The other thing that we haven't talked about is what is the other significant upgrade that they have made that I think plays a bigger factor in all of this is offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. And it is yet to be determined if he is a true upgrade over Brian Schottenheimer. However, I'm very confident in saying that I believe it will be. And if this offense is performing at a high level, not at the beginning of the year, but at the way that the year ends and the way that they finish, and that they're consistently playing at a high level and making adjustments and doing everything that they were able to do, I believe that they are a better team, that they have the potential to be a better team than a season ago.
I think you're right. I think that, and I'm glad you mentioned Shane Waldron, because that kind of goes into what I think was part of the problem. And it's not to say it was solely on Schottenheimer, but you feel a lot better if you're a Seahawks fan when your team retains a lot of people. If you felt that, say, 30% of the problem was personnel and 70% of the problem was lack of adjustments, was issues from play from guys that are otherwise good. Like, Russell Wilson was part of the problem in the second half of the season. If I had to bet money, I would not bet money on Russell Wilson being bad like next year. Like, he's mm-hmm. he's got to fix some stuff. I don't know what he needs to do. He's got to fix some problems. You also have like 8.5 seasons of really consistent play. So he's got to fix it. He was part of the problem, but I don't think it's something that necessitates a replacement the way that when we've talked about tight end, right, that you needed to find out something to do with your tight end group because they just weren't contributing. And I don't know if that was scheme. I don't know if it was personnel, whatever it was. You feel a lot better when it's something that you can fix within your control. So for the opposite example, New England really struggled with skill position players. They didn't have anyone that was like jumping off the charts. So what'd they do? They spent a ton of money on the top two tight ends. They went and got two wide receivers. Kansas City, they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. Their problem was they couldn't protect their quarterback. So what'd they do? They went and gave the richest contract in free agency to a guard. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you are a piece removed. For the Seahawks, they still need some pieces. You got to figure out cornerback. That's going to be a weakness of your team right now. You got to figure out a veteran pass rusher, because right now you have two rookies, one of whom hasn't played a snap, Rasheem Green and LJ Collier, as your defensive ends. That's it. You need someone else in there. So you've got holes still. But I didn't think that there was a glaring personnel issue with this team last year. It was a collapse of an otherwise good unit, and it was what made it so confounding, so baffling for fans. Why is this unit that has Chris Carson, Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, why are they collapsing? Mm-hmm. Why is this happening? Why is Russell Wilson playing like an abysmal brand of football? Like, why is all of this happening? They will, I'm sure, find a way to fix that and work on that this offseason. Another thing you fix, though, is your play calling. Make sure you're on the same page. Make sure you're being creative and adjusting to respond to injuries or teams taking a weapon out for you. I don't think they did that last year. Do they fix that by bringing in Shane Waldron? I don't know. But I think fans should feel comfortable that at least the biggest part of what they need to fix is something that is technically in their control.
Well, what I would say right now, as it stands, I would say that it was more 70% coaching and 30% personnel. And so the lack of adjustments that were made on offense, I think, was pretty damning to the overall success of the team in the second half of the season into the playoffs. The one glaring weakness that you did see unfold in the second half of the season, the offensive line, I think, began to deteriorate. Part of that also, though, because of scheme. You did not do anything to help those guys out from a play calling standpoint, from a run game standpoint, from the type of the passing plays that you're calling against some really good defensive fronts. So from that standpoint, to me, I look at that, and if that can be improved and your in-game situational management can be improved, that to me gives them a better chance. But if you talk about personnel-wise, and they're able to start with this core, and they're able to bring back Carlos Dunlap and even Benson Mayo and even KJ Wright, now you've got a group that played really well together in the second half of the season defensively. You're able to bring them back and are able to you're able to get them in a position where they're playing good, solid defensive football from the beginning, they don't need to be top five. If they can be top 15, that will be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can have this offense now with Chris Carson back and you really solidify who that third receiver is going to be, you've got a guy in Gerald Everett who I think can be a really, really good third piece of your offense. Outside of, you know, traditionally we talked about receiver three and David Moore, how are you going to replace that? Well, what if your tight end became the third receiver, right? What if he became the guy that really replaced that production? Yeah, a little bit. But Gerald Everett, I think, can do that. So overall, you have a group that can really compete. Can they continue to keep adding to where this isn't just a roster that you see that's top heavy, that doesn't have a lot of depth? Yes, I believe that they should still be aggressive. I still believe that they should restructure Russell Wilson's contract and Bobby Wagner's contract to open up a significant money where you can now be aggressive with your cornerback position, with that third receiver spot, at defensive tackle that no one's really talking about. They've got money where they can go out and get Dunlap and they can get a second pass rusher. Those are the things that I believe that they can go out and do and really solidify themselves as someone that isn't just going to survive through a great quarterback play, a great linebacker play and leadership from Bobby Wagner and the rest of the group, that you're and coaching staff of Pete Carroll, but that you're able to go out there and physically mm-hmm. be able to be a dominant roster that can keep up and contend when it comes playoff time. And guess what, Stacey? One thing that we really haven't talked about or gotten into the weeds of, have you seen the 2021 schedule for these guys?
I know the opponents.
There's not a whole lot of gimme games.
Yeah.
I mean, these are going to be tough games heading into this year. I mean, so when you talk about gimmies or teams that I look on the roster and you say, yeah, there's a win, there's a win, there's a win, I only see four. I only see like four legitimate. I can look at the schedule right now, and I feel pretty dang confident in checking that box off.
And to be fair, I felt that way about the Giants. So you really never know.
Well, yeah, exactly. You don't. And I'm looking at the Lions, the Jags. I'm looking at the Texans, and I'm looking at the Vikings and the Bears. So that's five. Those are five teams that I look at and say, okay, I feel pretty confident saying that's a win. But it's anybody's ball game, right? And they have traditionally dropped a game or two that they shouldn't have throughout this, you know, the course of Pete Carroll's career here. So the reason why I bring that up is that this is a season that's going to be very unique in the sense that the strength of schedule is going to be very, very difficult. And you need this roster to be able to contend and to be able to be deep. And I think that that's something that they're going after. And you're also going to need those young guys to step up. But if they're able to bring back that original question, Dunlap, Mayowa, KJ mm-hmm. Wright, fill out the rest of this crew, and you're essentially bringing back the same group as last year with a couple key additions with Shane Waldron, Gabe Jackson, Gerald Everett, I do think that you have made your team better. I would like to see them continue to keep improving that roster, however, at a couple other positions like corner and defensive tackle.
Here's why this conversation in general is interesting to me. I specifically remember the end of last season, a very stunned KJ Wright, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing what he's saying because he wasn't sliding past versions of Seahawks teams, but essentially saying this was the most Super Bowl ready the team had felt for a while. Like, he was baffled that they had been ousted in the wild card round because he felt like they had a good shot. He felt like they had a really, really good chance. The defense was getting right. They were leading the league in sacks in the second half of the year, I think since week 12 or something weird like that. In the offense, they knew could be great. It just had to get on the right page. And here's the thing. I keep seeing people texting in, well, it was like 70% Russell Wilson. It was 70% this one player. It was 70% Chris Carson. When you have a collapse like the Seahawks had on offense in the second half of the year, that is not one person or one problem. That is an entire problem with multiple people. This is the NFL. You don't just have one person make one mistake and then you go from being the number one offense in the league to middle of the road to looking comparatively pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
That's multiple problems. That's offensive coordinator. That's quarterback. That's head coach. That's other players. That's injuries. That's multiple issues. Now, the good news for Seattle is they don't need to find an answer to all of those in free agency. They don't need to spend their way out of that. I mean, they can make like maybe an upgrade at left guard now that Mike Iupati has retired. Like they do have a hole there, but Those are issues you should be able to fix yourself, Russell Wilson, that you should be able to fix yourself, Pete Carroll, that you guys need to get on the same page together. And so I'm seeing people say, well, what about this? What about Russell Wilson? What about go out and get a better running back or whatever? No. The reason that this is fascinating, and when we talk about bringing the band back together for Seattle and can that make them a Super Bowl contender, is because there were people on this team that felt like they could have been a Super Bowl contender with the pieces they had.
Yeah.
The problem wasn't the guys they had on the roster. The problem was that people were making decisions. I'm pointing to Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and Brian Schottenheimer as the three of them bearing the brunt of the responsibility here, because that's just kind of how this works when you're a head coach and quarterback. That they needed to make better decisions collectively.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Schottenheimer isn't here, so now that's on Shane Waldron, the three of them to figure out.
Yep, and I fully
that's why this is fascinating. It's
agree.
Not because there's a problem you can buy your way out of.
No, there's not, and I do think that they can put themselves in a prime position with this offseason and knowing that you're going to get good quality players that are going to be out there on, you know, in free agency over the course of the summer the way that it wouldn't otherwise be. But I believe that a lot of this has to do with that. If this offense is functioning at a high level in the second half of the season, if they are functioning at a high level going into the playoffs, I think that this is a different story. Mm-hmm. And what they're bringing to the table in terms of the new look, the revamped offense, what they will have, I am hoping that as that comes together, you will be able to look at that offense and see a stark difference, and you'll be able to see them adjust. You'll be able to see them continue to stay one step ahead of the defense, and they will have the talent to do so in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Gerald Everett, and obviously in Chris Carson and your quarterback and Russell Wilson. I think that they have what they want. Now it's, as I've said before and from the beginning, when they made this hire with Shane Waldron, they are pinning their hopes that Shane Waldron can be a legitimate difference maker to this offense and to this organization to help get them over the hump, especially with everything that they went through in the second half of the season last year.
All right, it is time for Three Questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Mariners had some fun in the fifth inning last night. Let's take a listen.
The windup and the 2-0 pitch. Swinging a drive deep into the gap in left center field. Peters going back. Goodbye, baseball. Mitch Haniger with a home run. Onto the berm in left center field. Three home runs for the Mariners here in the bottom of the fifth inning.
All three of those home runs coming off Dodgers ace Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, it did.
I know it's only spring training, but how good did it feel to watch the Mariners tee off on old glory boy himself, Trevor Bauer?
It felt pretty darn good to see that. What made it even better is, you know, Curtis, you sent us a DM.
I was going to say, can you read that?
Yeah, send us the DM of what Trevor Bauer said after the game.
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, he was basically just trying to not give the Mariners any credit on getting him.
Yeah.
It was
a version of saying I wasn't even trying.
Yeah, Bauer said this, quote, "I was just throwing pitches to get my pitch count up, and there was really no sequencing."
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Gotcha.
Hey, Trev. Okay.
Yeah, I wanted them to hit the ball because I just needed more work out there out on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be amazing to go out there and just do really, really bad at your job and just be like, I was just messing around. Like, it doesn't really matter. That's what a lot of the starting pitchers do in spring training, by the way, right? Like, that's the built-in excuse. Oh, well, they were working on this new fastball, or they were working on a new, you know, curveball or off-speed pitch that they're just going out there seeing if they can improve it. That'd be incredible. That's what Trevor Bauer was doing right there. And you know what? It made the outing that much more sweeter.
Question two.
Number two.
I'm rushing us to get to the
third one.
Man.
Well, question two. The Pac-12 continues their dominance of the NCAA tournament, moving four teams onto the Sweet 16. And then a fifth West Coast team, Gonzaga, they won comfortably over Oklahoma last night. So five of the 16 teams are West Coast teams. West Coast has not had very good success in the tournament recently. In fact, only one team west of the Mississippi has won the tournament since 1997. So will another do so in 2021?
I mean, I think there's a great chance. Right now, the way that these guys are playing, I mean, my goodness, USC embarrassed my Jayhawks last night. I don't really have much to say about this because I was just so mad watching that game.
That game was over 10 minutes in.
Immediately. Like, they didn't even show up. Unbelievable. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the way that Oregon won was extremely convincing and very impressive over Iowa. UCLA handling business versus Abilene Christian, and then seeing USC take care of business. Yeah, I'm impressed right now by the Pac-12.
Yeah, I don't think the Pac-12 is actually going to make it all the way, though, as much as I would love to see that. I think I'm still looking at these seeds. I mean, Baylor, I still feel fine about. Gosh, I hate to say this, but what if Syracuse surprises people? They won't. They won't last all the way. Sorry, Paul. Maybe I'll be wrong, but let's see.
Gonzaga's still alive.
Michigan's in here. Yeah, I guess Gonzaga. Gonzaga is actually who we took in our show to go all the way, but as much as I love the stories about like Oregon State, Oregon, all the Pac-12 teams advancing, and I would love it for the conference, I don't actually see a final that includes a Pac-12 team. Sorry.
Number three.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Got to be the realist. You're right. We got our rose-colored glasses on.
We do.
Well, right now,
it's been a great last 4 days.
It's been a great run. It's been a great run, and enjoyed every second of it. I'm still in shock, honestly. Like, I can't believe that the Conference of Champions, the Pac-12, is actually making some waves here. It feels good. It feels very good.
Feels amazing. Maybe not so good as finding
there we go
foreign objects in your food. A podcaster by the name of Jensen Karp tweeted yesterday that he found shrimp tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
It is not lost
on
me.
Those don't go together.
That his last name is Karp.
Yeah, fish. So the question is there any sugary processed food or any food really for that matter that you love so much that a couple of random shrimp tails wouldn't faze you?
Oreos, maybe. If I couldn't taste the shrimp tails, like if I found them in the package and tossed them away, and there wasn't anything else.
Those aren't easy to chew, though.
No. If I'm not eating the shrimp tails, like, because he didn't eat them. Say that I open my package of Oreos, which are my favorite thing in the world, and I find a shrimp tail on top, and I toss the shrimp tail away. If there's nothing else on any of the Oreos, it's going to be hard. I would, like, send a complaint, but while eating some of the Oreos. Mm. The problem for this guy is that there was other stuff in the bag. Yeah. And what he thinks it is, and this is disgusting, warning.
So gross.
What he thinks it is that a mouse or a rat was like nesting in whatever was at this factory. And that there are mouse droppings and that the shrimp is not from someone eating lunch and tossing it in there, but from like a little like hoarding nest that a mouse or rat. I know that's disgusting.
Don't say
you guys,
that.
I'm telling you, it's at Jensen Karp. The whole saga has been ongoing. And the craziest part about it, Jake, do you have a food that you want to suggest or would shrimp turn you off no matter what?
No, okay, you well, just same. Brought it to no, another level that I don't even want to talk about.
Well,
that's
look,
so gross.
I don't know if Oreos are good, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch, ugh. The reason it's controversial is because they tried to tell him, if you guys haven't seen the picture of him holding the shrimp tails, I cannot think of what would be more obviously a shrimp tail than if there was a live shrimp in his hand. It's a shrimp tail. There are two of them. Cinnamon Toast Crunch goes, after further investigation with our team that closely examined the image, it appears to be an accumulation of the cinnamon sugar that can sometimes occur when ingredients aren't thoroughly blended.
Nah,
we assure
dog.
You, no. There's no possibility of cross-contamination with shrimp. And this guy is like, what?
I know what I saw.
He goes, well, after further investigation with my eyes, these are cinnamon-coated, all caps, shrimp tails, you weirdos. All right.
Wow.
Let's jump back into this.
Bold move.
I know. We're going to jump back into this conversation about whether or not bringing the band back together is enough to get the Seahawks back to a Super Bowl when Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This is an interesting conversation. 5 minutes split between us telling you, Mike Salk, joining us now, brought to you by Jeffco Plumbing and Sewer. First, about Shrimp Man.
Ugh.
I shouldn't call him Shrimp Man. It's not his fault he found shrimp in Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Someone else was yelling at me on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line about also ruining their appetite.
Yeah, so it's pretty gross.
Apologies.
I mean, the goal here, Stacey, is to keep people listening, not to get people to stop listening
well,
because you've made them so disgusted.
I think it's going to be something that they hate that I'm telling them, but also are like glued to the radio or their smart speaker.
No. This is why we made Brock stop talking about Dr. Pimple Popper, because he would start like really
describing. I got to talk to Brock about that.
He'll spend all day with you on
that. I think Brock and I have higher thresholds for what we think is really gross when it comes to things that are like weird stories.
I have a very low bar for that. Yeah, like if it's even a little gross, I'm out.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I'm with Jake. Thank you.
Jake and I were
no interest.
In addition to talking about this story, we were talking about essentially the Seahawks, with the exception of so far two new additions. With Gabe Jackson and Gerald Everett, kind of bringing the band back together, right? You got Chris Carson back in here. You lost Shaquille Griffin, but for the most part, it seems as though trying to retain people as opposed to doing a total rebuild. Like the Patriots are out there buying basically a new set of skill players. So then we were talking about, okay, well, is bringing the band back together enough to get you to a Super Bowl? It got us into this really fascinating conversation about, well, is personnel the reason your offense fell apart in the second half? So I guess the question I'm throwing your way is focusing on just keeping what you have enough for the Seahawks to try to be a contender again?
Well, I think a couple things. One, the Seahawks believe themselves to be a developmental program. So they will look at their own players and see how they can get better from year to year. And that's always been the case. They're willing to bet on themselves as coaches and say, nope, we trust this person is going to improve. And that's why. Sometimes that's worked out. Sometimes it hasn't, right? I mean, sometimes you get, you know, what they did with Red Bryant, where they moved him from one place to another and everything clicked, and the next thing you know, he's a star. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get however many years we've had now of Rasheem Green, where you're like, yeah, I don't know if he's going to get it. Frank Clark got better every year. Rasheem Green is not. So, you know, there's and LJ Collier got better last year. Maybe they believe there's another gear for him in year three. I don't know that I believe that. I'd be a little skeptical, but you know, I think that that's the way they view it, so that's number one. Number two, the Seahawks don't panic. We panic, fans, media, people who observe the team, but Pete doesn't panic. He really doesn't. He's pretty calm, pretty steady, and is willing to look back over what happened. And I don't blame him in this case. Were the 2020 Seahawks perfect? No. Were the 2020 Seahawks as bad as they've been made out to be over the course of the last few months, especially following their loss to the Rams? Also no. I mean, they weren't a perfect team. But, and I'll continue to argue this, I don't think they lost that game against the Rams for any other reason other than they lost the turnover battle. Mm-hmm. I believe if they don't turn, and I've said this since the beginning, if they don't turn the ball over the second time, right, if the punt return isn't fumbled, I think they come back and win the game. You can disagree with me, but I've seen that movie too many times where that punt return energizes the team and the next thing you know, they're at the 50 and Russ just starts doing his thing and all of a sudden they're right back in the game. Defense comes up with a stop and you end up winning. I just have so much trust in what Russell does in those situations. Another reason, by the way, that I have no interest in them trading Russell Wilson for just about anything. Put him in that spot, and if DJ Reed doesn't fumble the ball, I think they win the game. So what, you're going to dismantle your whole team because DJ Reed fumbled? I don't think so. The margin is going to be thin in the playoffs. Most games aren't blowouts. And you were right there. Unfortunately, that wasn't your day. You had a bad day. You had two turnovers and you didn't force any. Do you have to get better? Yes. Do you need to add some pieces? Yes. Do you need to draft well? Are there tweaks that need to be done? But you changed your offensive coordinator. You're changing some of your system. You brought in a couple of guys on the offensive line. You brought in a new cornerback. You're going to get Marquise Blair back. Now let's go. Like I think I kind of like that.
Yes, and the one key part of this, though, is something that they have not done yet, and that is bringing back Carlos Dunlap and getting that pass rush.
They should do that,
right?
Yeah, that's pretty key.
And one thing that we had Rob Staton on Friday, and one of the things that he was talking about and illustrating, which I firmly agreed, it like spoke to my soul, is that in 2019 and 2020, you go into a situation and your pass rush was obviously a weak point, and you had to go trade to go get your group back to respectability and hope that it would cause this spark, right? And with Dunlap, it did. With Clowney, it didn't. He was a good player, but there wasn't a whole lot around him, right?
Well, and maybe he's a guy who could come back with Dunlap.
He could be, right? So that one's intriguing to me. But this year, in my mind, that can't be the approach. Like, you have to get this solidified in order for that conversation that you're talking about to be true. to bring this band back together, to have that pass rush. So in your mind, would you like to see Dunlap and Clowney, Dunlap and Alden Smith? Would you be comfortable bringing back Benson Mayoa a part of that combination?
Maybe I'm being a sucker for the name, but I guess I'd prefer Dunlap and Clowney. I mean, that sounds good if you can get them both on deals that work for you. I admit to just not wanting Alden Smith. I know he's had his successes in the last year, but I just don't want him. Like, I just pass.
Yeah.
Can I pass?
Oh, you can pass.
I think I think he seems like a bad guy. And the stories of what went on for so long, maybe he's cleaned up his life since, but if you could do it another way, I'd sure prefer to. That's just me.
We're going to be introducing a contest this week that we're all really excited about. We haven't actually had a chance to talk to you about it. You already know what it is, given that you're director of programming. But for anyone who doesn't know, who if you haven't heard the ads that have been running, it is an amazing opportunity, by the way. So I'm going to let you pitch it and then tell us whether you would be willing, given how cool this opportunity is, to eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch with shrimp tails to do this.
No.
Mike, you have to really sell it.
I'm not selling it that hard.
All right.
It's good, but I don't know what.
I think it's that good.
I don't know what potential prize in the world would be good enough.
Well,
for
here's
that.
What the prize is.
It would have to be like billions of dollars. And even then, I don't know. I think that sounds so disgusting.
So you guys are going to have an opportunity not only to be at the Mariners game, to.
Opening day,
April 1st against the Giants. Giants? Yes. Curtis says yes. To not only be there at opening day in a ballpark watching live baseball for the first time in a year, to literally welcome the rest of us into the park. You will be opening the gates to T-Mobile.
Isn't that cool?
It's awesome.
It's such a cool idea.
I'm so excited.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Like, honestly, it's monumental.
Yes.
It is such a big moment.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Brooke about this yesterday, and it was like, I might make it weird because I'd be too emotional. You know, like there comes a point where it's like it's cool and everybody's enjoying the moment. I might be a blubbering mess. Like that's a big moment.
There's sort of two cool parts to this promotion. One is you can't buy these tickets. I mean, like it's they're gone. There are no tickets. There's only 9,000 people who get to go to the game. They're not selling them publicly, as far as I know. And if they are, it's going to be an incredibly small number that they'll release.
I think
at
it's
the
season
end here,
ticket
right?
holders have priority. Yeah,
so there you go. I mean, and you're going to have enough season ticket holders who are going to take all the seats. So if you want to be in the park for opening day for the first time sports are back in Seattle in over a year, this is the only way to do it is to win it. And then secondly, you get to say, welcome back, open up the gate.
Yes, you're the hero for a day.
You get to be the hero.
You're the baseball hero. I don't know why you wouldn't be willing to have cinnamon coated shrimp tails, which sounds delicious.
Yeah, well,
in order to do that,
and
I don't know, maybe if you're picky like Mike.
I told Taylor that we need to use the frozen open up. Tell the guards to open up the gates line, but nobody will let me put it on the station. I don't know why.
There's probably a copyright reason.
They think it's not a fit.
I'm
going to
guess there's some deep legal trouble that Bonneville doesn't want to get into. Thank you, Mike.
See you guys.
Oh, you guys recording your podcast today?
No podcast this week.
Are you on vacation
Brock
again?
Brock is.
Of
I'm not on vacation. I'm right here. All Brock right. is on
All
course.
Right.
Of course.
No Brock and Sock podcast this week, you guys. Sad. I'm gonna go ahead and pitch next Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay, so don't forget, a week from now, if you haven't listened to last week's brockandsogpodcast.com.
Yeah, it's evergreen. Just go listen to last week's.
All right. There is some new interesting sound, both from Jeremy Fowler and Ian Rappaport, that indicates the drama between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks could be over. Is it over for now or over for good? We'll tell you what we think next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
If you guys are watching the stream of the show on 710sports.com, you'll notice that Jake is wearing a coat in the studio, inside the building wearing a coat. I'll tell you why.
It's a bomber jacket.
Okay, styling. It's a bomber jacket. It's not just styling. It's because he's wearing a white t-shirt under that, and he doesn't want us to match because he knows that I will yell twinsies and be incredibly annoying. And so out of spite, I'm waiting for him to start dripping beads of sweat. Of course I'll be annoying. Out of spite, he refuses to match.
Did you like bump up the temperature in the studio?
Yeah,
too,
I keep
like
turning it up
an
because
unbearable amount, like 78 degrees.
Look, it's not going to be as. The thing is that Jake and Curtis, so that you guys know, Jake and Curtis, they're best friends. They always joke around. They match all the time. And they get so excited when they accidentally wear the same thing on the same day. And they take pictures, and it's so funny. And so finally, it's my turn. And Jake is now leaving. So I'm sweating him out. I'm turning up.
I don't
know
what you're talking about. I've just got my bomber jacket on. That's it.
All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. We've got some new sound, both from Ian Rappaport and Jeremy Fowler, about the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and where that relationship is right now. So it sounds like from the two of these insiders that things could be on the mend. Let's see why they said that. So let's go to cut number four. This is Jeremy Fowler on why he thinks the two parties are in a better place.
I'm told that the player does not have any immediate plans to expand his trade list, which currently includes four teams. So Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson have been in some communication recently. I'm told the momentum has been positive. Look, none of this precludes Seattle from making a potential deal. They only have three draft picks this year. So if they feel like they can rebuild their roster from another team's draft capital and maybe get a quarterback in return, maybe they do that deal. But Seattle and Russell Wilson are in a better place than they were a few weeks ago.
Ian Rappaport, cut three. He says the peacemaking has begun.
It has started. Okay. Because one of the things they did was they traded for Gabe Jackson. And Russell Wilson wanted a big-time offensive lineman in free agency. The Seahawks were in big on Zeitler and I think offered him actually more than the Ravens. But he ended up choosing Baltimore for family reasons. And then, you know, they end up trading for Gabe Jackson. So that goes a long way in telling Russell Wilson, like, we are serious about improving the offensive line.
Now, we didn't have to hear that to wonder whether or not that was a step in the right direction, because when the Seahawks made this trade for Jackson, all of us were wondering, okay, is this an olive branch? I mean, you're making a trade for a guard. You were going to need a guard, but you gave up one of four picks that you had to get a good guard.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a step in the right direction? Jake, where's this relationship at right now?
I think that it is, as they're reporting, Jeremy Fowler and Ian Rappaport, that it is trending in the right direction and that things are coming together and hopefully it will continue to do so. And one of the biggest things is that I look at the situation and I've never looked at it just for this season in 2021 because, one, I never really believed that it was going to happen or that it was truly, genuinely possible that they were going to trade Russell Wilson this offseason. I just think that there's so many factors involved in that Russell Wilson himself did not want to be traded this offseason. So now the question becomes, is the drama over for now or is it over for good? That's a big difference, right? Are we going to come right back around and have this conversation next offseason and it become even more heated? Or are things settled down and are things going to be settled down so that we're not worried about Russell Wilson's future here until, you know, 2023, which is the end of his contract here in Seattle for that period of time? That to me is more important because more so than anything else, I want to know that this is settled. I want to know that this is squashed. I want to know that I can count on Russell Wilson as the franchise quarterback to be that guy for this team over the next couple years. And if you're Pete Carroll and John Schneider and you're building your team and you're trying to look at this in long-term perspective, and you see this as a Super Bowl window right now in over the next couple years, then it is vital that you are able to figure that out and have that answer to that question. And as of right now, you're trending in that direction. I think the move that they made for Gabe Jackson, I think it speaks a lot. I think it speaks volumes because, look, did they think that the market was probably going to play differently, that they thought they were going to have Zeitler on the market a little bit longer and Gabe Jackson was going to eventually get cut and there were going to be a lot more guys available on the offensive line at this point? Yeah, I firmly believe that is the case. So you got in a position where you didn't want to be in. They didn't want to give up one of their draft picks. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. For Gabe Jackson?
They had four.
No, they and had then three. And then to have to pay him $9.5 million.
Yep.
Right, for 2 years and be stuck with that contract. They didn't want to be in that position, but they knew they needed to do that, and they were willing to do that. And to me, that speaks volumes of recognizing the need and also recognizing how important it is to make that happen. They weren't going to let an excuse get in the way, which stands out.
Devil's advocate, because I like playing that role here with this conversation. Devil's advocate. Is it ever going to be over for good? Like, if you're John Schneider or Pete Carroll, are you thinking, look, like, is this going to be just one of many things that you're going to constantly like push back and publicly speak out about? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is there a solution to get us all on the same page? Or are you going to be constantly pushing to call the shots?
I believe that this is a situation where hopefully through the process, they are able to come together. They are able to communicate as to how things can move forward and how things can be better between player and organization so that you don't run into this problem again. That's why I asked the question. Genuinely asked the question. Is it squashed for now or is it squashed for good? Because the answer to that question is very, very important. And I would like to think that it is being worked towards being squashed for good, for the health of the franchise, for the health of the organization for now and the future. And I just think it's very important and that this group has an opportunity to continue to keep competing for Super Bowls with the group that you have now. And I don't think that the grass is greener on the other side, really for either side at mm-hmm. this point. And so now, can they get into a space and can they continue to get into a space where things get even better and better and better, and now you're not worried about it? That, to me, is the big question. And the other question I'd have for you, and Curtis, you could chime in here too, and everybody on the Vizzy Heart Seltzer text line 710-710, what would it take for you to be convinced that things are squashed for good? What would have to happen for you to fully believe that things are squashed for good and things are good on both sides from Russ and the organization to the point where you're not even worried or thinking about it again?
Someone from the 206, it becomes squashed when the quote talking heads quit talking about it. You know what? When this is actually a non-story, I will stop talking about it. For right now, your franchise quarterback is reported to be seeking a trade or be interested in a trade or vice versa, that the organization is interested in trading him. When I feel like that's not there, I'm not going to have any more questions. Like, trust me, there are days I come in and I'm like, is this changed? Is there something else? And then you'll have Michael Silver do an interview. You'll have someone else
Michael
do an interview.
Silver.
Michael Silver. You have, I inadvertently did it, and then I felt bad. Then you have...
Did I just hear Michael Silver?
Stop.
Hey,
and then
guys,
you have
it's me.
Someone else. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you're right. You're right, in a sense, but...
Well, some people are saying, hey, it's going to take winning a Super Bowl. It's going to take for you knuckleheads to stop talking about it. It's going to take...
Hey,
I'm
not a knucklehead.
Well, I just threw that in there because I consider us knuckleheads.
Well, I was a double major, so.
In a loving way. Okay. Of course.
Double majors can still be knuckleheads.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, right.
Very
okay.
much so,
that's
by the
ridiculous.
Way.
Someone else. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah. Signing an extension. Joint press conference. I don't think we're going to see that. Restructuring of a contract. To me, that's what I personally think, that a restructure of a contract for Russell Wilson, and Bobby Wagner for that matter, you know, restructuring is a word that gets used too much. It's really converting money, right? So you're converting base salary or a roster bonus into signing bonus money. Once you do that, I think that squashes it a little bit because it becomes way too hard to move on from either one of those players. You're fully committed to those players at that point. That's a great signal to that. And the player is committed to the organization as well. 12-3 NFC champs Super Bowl.
From the 425. 425, this is not answering the question. They said, if the Hawks don't sign Dunlap, our pass rush will be more absent than, quote, Brian at couples date night.
Wow.
Okay, wow.
Wow.
That was not the question.
No, but
it's true.
It is very, very
true. We've never seen Brian.
He's always really busy. I keep telling you guys, he is busy at the space station.
I don't know.
You guys have your couples nights on, like, random weeknights, and he's doing important stuff. So he can't be there. He'll probably
gotcha.
Be there at opening day. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I doubt it.
Okay,
you're
well,
going to be like, oh, he's over there somewhere. He's grabbing nachos.
Let me grab him. And 5 hours later, where did Stacy go? Just ran away. Hey, before I forget, we're taking you around the diamond. Thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners and Chris Flexen will take on the Arizona Diamondbacks tonight, 6:10 p.m. live at 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Let's keep this conversation going, but we're going to bring on a special guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but his name rhymes with Mo Man of NBC Sports.
It's Joe Fan.
Joe Fan joins us next. Thank you, Kirk.